Welcome. My name is Charlene Garrett, and this is the Accidental Mentor Podcast, where we believe that mentoring, while intentional, is sometimes purely accidental. This is episode 8 of a 5-hour conversation that I had with my friend Julie. Please like, share, subscribe wherever you listen so that other people can hear about this podcast. Last episode, we talked about smoking and shame, and just more about how that worked out in Julie's life and in our relationship as mentor and mentee. This next episode, we're going to hear how Julie started doing things different in her second 10 years that we were mentoring together, and how that impacted her choices, even who she spent time with and chosen family. So listen in. Here's today's episode.
I lived in Africa and came back.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think they came out until 2007.
Yeah, it was later. Those were the early days. So the second 10 years of life, you mentioned, man, so many things. So you did the encounter, you got connected to church, you started teaching encounter, you made a community, right, out of the church. But there was a season. Talk a little bit about, and, you know, I had a little bit of influence here, but probably not a ton. Talk about getting from Kendra's house onto your own, and then you were on Social Security disability. You're no longer on disability. You haven't been for a while. What was that process like of like the next phase of, there's a whole lot of believing, I think, a whole lot of praying that you did, I remember.
What was that like? And there were times when it was easy to pray. I think for me, and this is still true, if it's ridiculously giant, it's way easier for me to trust God. There's literally nothing I can do about it. I can't even pretend to try to fix this. I'm like, okay, trusting you, I'm all in. But if there's like the slightest chance I can fix it on my own, my tendency is to, you know, go toward the worry naturally, not naturally, but through patterning. So I'd have to be intentional and practice not doing that. Practice, you know, renewing my mind. So one thing I did was like, okay, well, I have double horrible rental history. There's no way I can get anywhere. I couldn't get an apartment. I had now an income and my Social Security, so I had plenty of money at this point, but no one would give me a chance. And so I was just driving around praying in a neighborhood, and I just felt the Lord. I was like, where do I go? And he was like, was it something about not going to the left, go to the right? And I went to the right, and there was a for rent sign in this yard. And I'm like, this is a house. I can't have a house. But the Lord is like, just give it a try. And so I put an application. I talked to the people, and they also had like a special. So it was like no first month's rent, no deposit, or like $100 deposit, something crazy. And I just talked to them, and they accepted me, and I moved in to this house, and it was awesome. And I loved it. And that season was okay.
I was going to say, I remember you calling me and asking me about this. And I think you told me how much it was.
Yeah.
A month. And I remember
how are you going to pay for that?
Wow. Okay. Yeah. And I think what I want to insert here is I would say the thing that I did for you the best was to keep my mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember being like, I don't know if this is going to work.
I had a plan, Charlene.
I know, but I had a hard time. I couldn't believe for you, right? And it was beyond what I could do. So go ahead with your plan, because I think
and it was what my plan was in my mind. Well, one, I knew that I was praying for my husband, so any day he could be here, any day. That was 5 years before that happened, or before I even reconnected. 8 years till he actually came here. We got married. So I think the Lord used that because it still wasn't a good financial decision. Right? You would have not been in the wrong to give me wisdom and saying, hey, this is more than you can really afford, especially considering once you start working, ultimately you come off of disability. You can't do both, which good job, government. You shouldn't be able to do both. so good job. But I was only able to pay for it because of the dual income. But in my mind, I would just get a roommate. It's a wonderful house. Roommates, you know, you can always do that. And I didn't have a lot of roommates historically because of my anxiety. So I was like, well, I could do that. I could have a roommate. Apparently, roommates are way harder to find when you have standards.
That's a life lesson. Roommates are really hard to find.
So hard. It's like, you can't do drugs here. Like, I'm out. Okay. No, your significant others cannot sleep over. Okay. Not doing it. I was like, well, and I did. I tried. I was on the roommate app, everything, and it just didn't work. And so from that one, when I came off of disability, I didn't make enough money. There wasn't enough money. Not that I spent it crazily. There just wasn't enough to make all the bills. And so I once again was going to get evicted. And I, this was when I was connected to the church. And I did. I tried really hard to find a roommate. It just wasn't going to happen. And so I had to leave. And Catherine, who you mentioned earlier, I didn't know where I was going to go. And I had no plan. I knew nothing. And I'd been there almost a year. So I made it almost to, like, I was almost done with the lease. And which is the stinky part, but it was the end of November. And she called me and said, and I was the next day or the day after next was when I had to leave. So I'm like packing, zero plans of where I'm going again. I have a wonderful job, a church community. I was like, but still no plan at all. And she called me and said that Jean from the church, who I didn't know well, but I'd met her, that she, you know, is single and lived alone and that her kids had moved out and she would be happy to let me stay there while I figured things out. And so God, again, provided a very safe, wonderful place. Thank you, Jean, for me to land. She makes delicious soups. So she would make soups and I had wonderful talks with her. And that was very short lived. God didn't make, that didn't last long because then I was like, oh man, I have to find another apartment. Like, I'm running out of my favor. With all these places, there's no way. But I was like, no, God is going to not make me be homeless after doing all this. Like, that's just not a thing. And so I continue going to work and looking for a place. And I got turned down from some of the sketchiest places. Like, probably I wouldn't even lived in back when I did do drugs. I was like, oh, this is bad. I got turned down because I had evictions and I wasn't good risk back then. Or I was at the time. I just went.
You were better risk than you used to be.
Better risk.
I got people didn't know that yet.
People didn't know because the credit hadn't told
them yet. The track record hadn't caught up. Yeah.
Hadn't caught up yet. So I went into this apartment and I looked at it and I was like, oh my gosh, this place is great. It had a great special. It was, you know, like half as much as I was paying for the house. I was like, this is perfect. But I was like, I don't know how to do this. They're not going to take me. And it was like a second chance apartment they had. And I'm like, oh, this is like the fourth chance. I don't know that they're going to do it. And I just felt the Lord tell me to be honest, like, don't lie. Do not be shameful about it. And so I just went and I told her the truth. I said, you know, I previously had, you know, Social Security and an income that, you know, I've gotten better. So now I just have my income and this apartment I can afford. And the girl was like a contractor and she said yes and signed my lease. And by the time I moved in, like a week or two later, I went to see her and she didn't work there anymore. Apparently she was just like a short-term contractor that God put there to say yes to me. So it was wonderful. And I lived there for a few years and then my mom lived with me. We moved to a two-bedroom. And then
Right. She moved back into town from Houston for a while.
Living with my mama, or her living with me. And then to get here was some work done on my credit and some just longevity. I think that's something that people struggle with when you get freedom or you get to that next level in your life and the enemy's always telling you, oh, you're gonna fall back into old habits. You're gonna do it. And there is, unfortunately, a level of people have to see it sometimes. And that's okay. They're people too. God knows the truth of what happened in me and it didn't matter to me that people couldn't necessarily see it back then because I had fully got on board with what the truth was. And I had to do it a little bit longer. Like, I remember even when I started at my current job, I'm like, well, how do I tell my testimony? Should I probably tell it to everybody? Or what if they, you know, if they find out? And you just gave me kind of wisdom in, you know, and probably once you've been there for a while, it would be well received, probably not on your first day.
Probably don't open with it. It's probably not your opener. Hey, by the way, So the season of time that you lived with your mom or your mom lived with you when she came back to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, that time, if I remember in talking to you, was very different than the times before when you had lived with your mom and just in your relationship with your mom. And so it wasn't like you were on a stool or a chair on top of a table in a situation. Can you speak a little bit more to the differences and what that was like?
Yeah. No, it was, like you said, very different. So opposite of, like, when I went to Florida, it was kind of a chance to go, oh, I really didn't get past a lot of this stuff. I didn't really change anything. I just got away from things and didn't focus on it. And so when my mom came to live with me, and like I said, one of the hardest things for me was the fact that she didn't help me when I left Houston. Like, I was so mad and so hurt. That didn't last very long at all. That was very short lived. But when she came to live with me, we were both in very different places. So she had been working on, you know, her own inner healing and had come to a different place. And I was in a place where I was able to set healthy boundaries. So we used to feed off of each other, and it would be like, okay, one of us is broken. And so one of us would take care of the other, and we would just kind of go back and forth. And it was never healthy. But when she came to live with me, there was an opportunity for us to genuinely have connection without that dysfunction. And it doesn't mean it was perfect. My poor mama absolutely still gets the worst of my attitude. So y'all say prayers for her because she's an angel. But we were able to live together in a way where when the stuff came up, we just refused to partner with it. We're like, no, we're not going to do this. This is not how we operate in this house. You know, we can get mad, throw fits if we want to, but we're not going to do that toward another person or expect to bring another person into it with us, because people like to bring other people into their pain. It makes it feel less like you're the one that's broken if other people are also dysfunctional. So I used to attach to people who had similar levels of emotional maturity as I did at the time, because it makes you feel better. But getting a chance to live with my mom, where we lived very, like, a real healthy relationship. We weren't codependent. I mean, we don't always make the perfect laugh choices, like binging on Lifetime movies and having snacks. It's probably not the best. Not Lifetime. Is it Lifetime? No, that Lifetime's the
Hallmark?
Hallmark movies, yes. Hallmark, which is basically that same story over and over again. But my mom will let me pause it no matter when I have to get up. She probably never got to watch anything. I have a hard time sitting still. But yeah, so we lived together for 2 or 3 years, and she was involved, you know, she came to the church with me. And then when I moved here, she actually helped me navigate buying a house and doing all of those things, but not in a way like she used to, where it was like, let me help you, let me go beyond my means of what I really have capacity to give you and make this better. It was, okay, this is what I know about buying a house. This is what, you know, because I live with you, this is what I can commit to as far as, what my contribution will be. But it was never trying to save me. And so it gave me, and so in that season, I was doing things for myself. It was weird because I always thought that someone would have to help me. And I had a delusional or misguided view of what help and love was. And so what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, well, I can't, as my mom would say, I can't think of how that you say that in English.
All those languages that you speak.
All the language I know, yeah. But I remember just English. It's coming. But there was a lot of peace. Like, our house was so peaceful. Because of the way that we stewarded our relationship. And that didn't come just naturally. It wasn't like, oh, we magically, neither one of us have bad patterning or self-defense mechanisms or codependency tendencies. It's not that stuff goes away, but when you're rooted in truth and you know that God provides everything, there's nothing that I'm going to go through that he's not prepared for. There's nothing that as much as we need our mommies and we want them, we are supposed to go through a healthy attachment as children and move on from that. And I, you know, it took a long time before I was able to do that. But now, like I said, our relationship is wonderful. And she lived here until I got married, and then God gave her a wonderful retirement community to live near my brother and his kids so that I could work on my new relationship with my husband. You know, relationships don't magically get, oh, there's no problems and no one has any baggage or get poked with their emotions. You're like, oh, that kind of hurt. You have to, it's work. It is work. And it's good. And I didn't think work was good before.
Another set of processes.
Processes. Right? Always with the another processes.
Onion. You got another onion going on. So it sounds like your time that your mom was with you this last time when you guys lived together for those few years, in some ways, you were saying you kind of grew and you were reparenting, you know, yourself. She was reparenting. Mm-hmm. There were just some changes, you know, as we grow. And I think I experienced that, you know, when I first moved to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I lived with a family, 7 kids. I'm the oldest. And I had never had a chore before. And every Saturday was chore day. And I was in charge of cleaning the fans, the ceiling fans. Mm-hmm. I just looked up at my ceiling fan. And the toilets. That was my job. And I was the big sister. So I'm the baby of 5. I'd never been the oldest either. So all of a sudden, I had all of these children looking up to me. And from 6 years old was the youngest at the time. Shout out to Derek, who's no longer 6. And all the way up. Now you're caught up. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. You're like, whoa, this family. And it wasn't always wonderful. There definitely were some moments where they were very direct with me. The parents were very direct. I was going through a lot of different things. But I was super thankful that they stuck around and hung in there and helped me. And it wasn't that my parents were terrible, awful people. It was that there were just some holes, you know, in my own upbringing, and some of it my responsibility and my fault, and some of it there. So I think there's definitely seasons of that. And I've had the privilege of being in this situation where I've gotten to help young adults reparent. And I've been the parent in that relationship. I think we were more like sisters, you know. I considered you more like a sister than a child, you know. I never really thought that. So you got less stuff.
They got way more stuff than me. Nobody's bitter.
Nobody's bitter. Oh, guys, I don't know if you think Julie. No, but so they got less stuff, and I think I didn't realize that that's what was happening until one of them asked, you know, I was like, how can I help you? What do you need? And she's like, I need a mom. What's interesting is she had a mom, a very good one. She has a mom. And I got to know that mom. And so I've had the opportunity to be a friend to that mom, to walk through like lots of different situations, not all great and fun, but nonetheless, consistent, like just staying, just like family does, right? Yeah. Like just consistently being there. And you became a part of that family. So that's where I'm headed here, because I think that that's kind of funny. I haven't asked for permission, so I'm not using names.
Okay.
Just so you know, with these young women. But I'm really excited that you got to be Aunt Julie. You are Aunt Julie to at least 3 young women that call you Aunt Julie and have reached out to you. Tell me about, so we went to Greece together with this group, and I'm curious about your perspective of when I brought you into this like motley crew of this family that I'm creating out of state and said, hey, this is Aunt Julie.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Tell me about what your perspective is.
Well, for me, it's awesome because they're amazing and it's Auntie Julie. Auntie Julie?
Auntie
Julie. Because I literally just talked about this. Someone asked me how I pronounce aunt. It was aunt or aunt. And I said, if you ask my brother's kids, it's Aunt Julie. If you ask my adopted nieces, it's Auntie Julie. It really honestly never was weird because I know you so well and I knew what you had done in my life. And so it was interesting though, seeing it from you being more of the parental role versus, cause it was, you're way more involved with them, than you were with me. And so it was very different. And then when they looked to me, I felt really kind of bad because I get to be the cool aunt all the time.
So true. Oh my gosh.
Love y'all. I get to be cool and fun and you have to put down boundaries and rules. And not that I didn't have boundaries or rules. I mean, I live my life in the same way. I didn't change anything about that for them, but it was really honoring to see one that, you know, because I had never had a lot of family. I mean, my family is very small, and we didn't have a family. You know, my mom was a single mom. My dad had a problem with alcohol most of his life, but God redeemed that as well. And yeah. I had a beautiful 6 years with him before he passed. But I hadn't had family. And so as far as where you're consistently multiple people, right? A lot of times it was me and my mom, or, you know, it was kind of one-on-one, but having multiple people, like on our trip, like the dynamic of all of us being together, sleeping in one room.
We totally did.
Where nobody snored, ma'am. Nobody. Certainly not me. And then having, you know, that few weeks that we were all together all the time, and just the dynamic of seeing how you interacted with them, it was very different than it was with me. But I was honored to be a part of it. And just like now I have my family. So my husband's Charlene is what I call it, is the pastor that married us, and basically now like his father. And they welcomed us in with open arms, and they're just such amazing people. And when he passed recently and I went there, there is so much family, And it's amazing, and it can be a lot all at one time over me because you don't know how to do it. Like, I'm not, I'm not yet hospitable. You know, my brain doesn't go to those things. And, and they grew up in a family where that was prioritized and where Christ was prioritized. And that's just wasn't my original experience. So when I get into these, you know, new families that aren't necessarily the ones I was born with, you learn more about like sticking things out. And, you know, I get to see you walk the relationship with them. And then I have my own relationships with them that have formed independently of the fact that you're, you know, I think there was even a season where I was the favorite. You were mean or something.
There definitely was a season. I mean, I don't think it's because I was mean, but maybe. It depends on the perspective, and maybe one day we'll get to put all the pieces together and everybody will get on here. But
oh, that would be so much fun.
That would be a fun little bonus episode of...
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Big fat Greek vacation. Big fat Greek family vacation. So how do I say this? I knew that you were going to have a place pretty early on as the favorite aunt, because, you know, I'm single. I've never birthed a child, but I have been an aunt for a very long time. And when I was young and my brother's kids were young, I loved being the fun aunt that flew in. Like I would say blow in, blow up, blow out, buy the things that mom and dad aren't going to buy, that they're going to be annoyed by, the loud toys and those kinds of things. Take the kids to Build-A-Bear when they were little. Become the fun aunt during teenage years. So even when I was actually in high school, I remember being the person that adults in my church when I was in high school would hope that their teenagers. So I was like maybe a senior in high school and the freshman in high school, or when I first went off to college and came back, would talk to, because they weren't talking to their parents at that point. They didn't want to talk to mom, but they needed to talk to somebody. And so she was thankful that, you know, they didn't ask me, what are they saying? But she just trusted that I would have some better advice than a peer of their child or something like that. And so I knew that that was going to be necessary. As soon as I realized that I had more of a maternal relationship with these women, I remember you saying to me one time, Charlene, when you were mentoring me, when we were in Texas, there was nothing that you could say that just was wrong, or, you know, you thought I hung the moon at the time. I was on your pedestal, right?
I fell from that really.
Oh,
and have you on a pedestal?
That was my like awareness that this wasn't the same type of mentoring relationship with these young women, was that it felt like, and this isn't true, it just felt like sometimes that there was nothing that I could say that was right. Mm. And when I talked to my friends who are moms of teenagers and folks a little bit older in their early 20s and things, they would be like, oh yeah, it's like that for a season. It's come back around because they've all grown now and we have much different relationships. But there was a time when, you know, I couldn't say anything. And I didn't have a very good relationship. And it came out as me wanting to fix, or I heard, because I'm a professional coach now, don't coach me. Don't coach me. And like, okay, don't coach. You're not asking for that. And it's a learning, you know, it's a lesson of different types of relationships. I don't remember how we decided to go to Greece, but I remember that I was super excited about it. And I love planning trips. I loved that we were able to do that 2018 and take this vacation that turned out. It was 5 years ago.
Yep. Halfway point in the second 10 years.
Halfway of the second 10 years. And two of the young women had never had passports before, so it was their first international trip. And lots of good memories. Tough times. I remember some tough conversations and different things, but like lots of learning and fun. And you're right. We slept in a very small Airbnb. No,
it was a giant room. I mean, it was just camp style, which I thought was genius. It was camp style. We got to sleep right behind the restaurant, which had the beach access. I thought it was perfect.
It was a good location. I thought it was a good location. It was a great place to see Santorini on a budget. I mean, we budgeted that sucker. We had a good – do you remember climbing, going on the boat ride, and then climbing up those steps?
Oh, when I couldn't ride the donkey. Yeah. So many steps.
We couldn't ride the donkey.
So
many steps.
So many steps.
Only those – a little lighter than us.
A little lighter than us got to ride the donkeys.
Which seems backwards unfair, but whatever. Yeah,
but not to the donkeys. The donkeys.
Not to the donkeys. Donkeys were happy, right?
Donkeys were happy. They're probably not. I don't know that that's their joy in life as a whole, but yes. I remember we walked all the way top. We climbed a volcano.
We did.
We did all kinds of stuff.
We had a lot of fun and swam in that pool, played games at dinner time. We ate lots of really good food. I remember
I had
3-2-1 call girl. I have no idea. I don't remember the game anymore, but that was my password for a lot of things for a long time because I thought it was so funny.
That was hilarious.
But yeah, we had a really good time and I'm able to point at those pictures and think about that as family, as a marker. Yeah. And one of those women is married and has a baby. Another is engaged and lots of change. Everybody's launched in their own cities and working. And I'm proud of everybody. Just lovely. And I love family and I love creating family and I love bringing people back to family and having lots of different families. My two best friends, their sons, they all have boys. So all of their boys call me Aunt Charlene and I enjoy being a part of their family. So I think that, you know, there's just different ways that we can impact people's lives, right? And how we're impacted. And that's an aspect of mentoring. It's life on life and it's paying it forward. And I'm just so thankful that you jumped in with me to the weird of that and paid it forward and continue to in your own relationships with those young women. And I look forward to, I mean, and just how Steve has jumped in as well as Uncle Steve. He doesn't even know them, but he's like, okay.
He's way more generous than I am.
I know. I'm super thankful. That's helpful.
Generous. And it's not that I'm not generous. I just am like, we didn't do all that. So like, I didn't grow up in an environment where you do all of the gifting and the, I mean, it was just really small. And so it's not something that I'm used to. It's not my normal. And so when I'm looking at it and then, you know, now I live a very different life. My budget used to be very different. Well, even pre-marriage, I was still single. Budget's very different. Than having two incomes.
Yeah.
But he's very quick. I don't think he's like that even before he got married. If someone needs something and he's just a giver.
I will mention here that I got a birthday gift because of Steve. You handed it to me and said, Steve got you. And I knew what that meant. My birthday card.
Oh!
The card. Steve got you. You're like, you probably would have given me a card. Which... I understand. I'm not a big card. This conversation might have been part of my favorite part, right? Of the entire 5 hours.
We talked about Greece, but not just remembering Greece, remembering the connections of the first investments that I made in the first 10 years with Julie and how that has impacted as she began to change and apply those things and how she's giving that advice and impacting my girls who I love and just this family connection that was created. It just was such, has been such a blessing. I just am so excited about how those connections happen. Has that happened to you where you've seen friendships or mentor relationships that have connected dots for you? Different parts of your life come together, or even kind of that paying it forward idea. I want to hear about it. Put your comments, your experience right here in YouTube, or contact me on social media. All of my contact is right there in the show notes. Would love to hear from you. Continue this conversation. Another way you can continue the conversation is by liking, subscribing, reviewing, so more people can join in and talk about how they've been mentored, how they will mentor. Let's keep this going. In the next episode, we are going to hear about Julie's journey to marriage and my influence or non-influence in that, which is great. So just remember, he who began a good work in you will carry it out to completion. My name is Charlene Garrett, and this is The Accidental Mentor.